Via remote, this is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Donald Trump and Democratic challenger Joe Biden were locked in a tight contest for a new four-year term in the White House Tuesday night, with the national outcome of the election hanging on undecided contests in key political battleground states. By mid-evening, both Trump and Biden won states they were expected to win, but the outcome of individual contests in several states, North Carolina, Virginia, Pennsylvania, in the eastern part of the country, Michigan and Wisconsin in the Midwest, and Arizona in the Southwest U.S., were unsettled as officials counted millions of votes, some that were cast on Tuesday and many more in recent weeks in early voting. The national winners determined by the outcome in each of the 50 states and the national capital city of Washington, D.C. The biggest states have the most electoral votes and the most sway in the Electoral College. National polls have for weeks shown Biden leading Trump nationally by about 7 or 8 percentage points, but only about half of that margin or less in key battleground states that are likely to determine the outcome. Democrats were on track, as expected, to retain their majority control in the House of Representatives, but continued Republican control of the Senate was uncertain, with the outcome of several contests throughout the country undecided. Meantime, Acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf told reporters earlier Tuesday there is no indication that a foreign actor has successfully interfered in the election. The U.S. National Hurricane Center says Hurricane Eta, now a Category 2 storm, hovering over northeastern Nicaragua, bringing life-threatening storm surges, catastrophic winds, and flash flooding to the area and portions of Central America. For more news, as always, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, via remote. This is VOA News. The Islamic State is claiming responsibility for a deadly attack in Vienna. A statement issued through the Amaq News Agency, along with a picture and video purporting to show the gunman. Austrian officials have identified the attacker as a dual citizen of Austria and North Macedonia, who had been sentenced to 22 months in jail and last year for attempting to travel to Syria to join Islamic State. The gunman, who was killed by police minutes after opening fire on crowded bars, had been released from jail less than a year ago. Britain is raising its terrorism threat level from substantial to severe following recent terrorist activity in France and Austria. Britain's M15 and Domestic Intelligence Agency said the severe alert means a terrorist attack is highly likely. It is the fourth highest of the nation's 5 threat levels. Britain's Home Secretary, Priti Patel, says the alert means people should be alert and not alarmed. She said the alert is a precautionary measure. M15's Joint Terrorism Analyst Center raised the level following a recent knife attack by a radicalized Chechen refugee in Nice, France, and the shooting of 4 people in Vienna late Monday by an armed man identified as a convicted jihadist. South Korea's military said on Wednesday it had taken into custody a North Korean man who crossed the heavily fortified border with North Korea into the south, prompting an urgent search operation. The Joint Chiefs of Staff said the man was found on the eastern end of the demilitarized zone dividing the two Koreas, adding there was no unusual movement among the North Korean troops. An investigation is planned to find out details about the man, including how he had come down and whether he wished to defect. The operation came as South Korea on Wednesday restarted tours to the southern part of the DMZ, which has been several armed clashes, but also served as a venue for key inter-Korean events, including some of the most recent summits. And the Peruvian president, Martin Vizcarra, said Tuesday he will go before Congress to defend himself against charges of corruption in the impeachment trial next week. Also, the Congress of the Mexican state of Pueblo voted to legalize same-sex marriages by an overwhelming majority Tuesday, marking a step forward for LGBT rights in the predominantly Roman Catholic Mexico. For more news, voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, November 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ivory Coast President Ouattara has a strong lead in preliminary results, but the opposition has set up a parallel government.
Now that I'm talking to you, we don't know how many people have been arrested. Where is Mr. Bidye now? We are not sure if he's at home in his residence or if he has been arrested really. So we are trying to check all this.
Thousands of Ivorians flee post-election violence to neighboring countries. Burkina Faso's election excludes hundreds of thousands of displaced people. Uganda's presidential challengers register for 2021 election amid tear gas and heavy security. And Malawi will open an embassy in Jerusalem.
The Minister of Foreign Affairs from Malawi is in Israel, and they are working on a timeline to the establishment of not only an embassy in Israel for Malawi, but also on a timeline for the establishment of a representation for Israel here.
Also in Malawi, female journalists march against rape and abuse. And Zimbabwe authorities rearrest journalist Hopewell Tigono. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ivory Coast President Alassane Ouattara has taken a commanding lead in preliminary results from last Saturday's election. The Electoral Commission says Mr. Ouattara has so far garnered 94% of the vote cast. The main opposition parties boycotted the election, but they announced on Tuesday the establishment of a National Transitional Council, a kind of parallel government, because they say President Ouattara's election is illegal. The government has accused the opposition of sedition, and police on Tuesday surrounded the home of opposition leader Henri Konan Bedie. Jean-Yves Tchéide is vice president for finance of former Ivory Coast president Laurent Gbagbo's party.
The opposition leaders are being arrested by the government. As you know, 2 days ago, in fact, yesterday, on behalf of the opposition, Mr. former President Bedie decided to create the National Council for Transition because we consider that there is no legal president in Cote d'Ivoire today. So Mr. Bedie has decided to create a National Council for a Transition, and the transition will set up a government, and that government will be preparing the next presidential election. As we consider that there has been no election last Saturday. So this is the position of the opposition today, and the government has considered that this is a kind of coup to overthrow their government, and they are arresting the leaders. So they went to Mr. Bedier's house to arrest everybody there. Now that I'm talking to you, we don't know how many people have been arrested. Where is Mr. Bedie now? We are not sure if he's at home in his residence or if he has been arrested really. So we are trying to check all this.
Let me get it right. We hear that the police have surrounded the home of opposition leader Konan Bedie. Is this true?
Yeah, that is true. They surrounded his house, and that began by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Up to now, they are still surrounding his house. Now, in the beginning of the evening, I have been told that they forced the door and they entered his residence. And we don't know if they have arrested some leaders. We are trying to check that.
The opposition has established a National Transitional Council. This is a kind of parallel government. The Ivory Coast government says that this is a declaration or a conspiracy against the state.
It is a bit complicated to explain, but our political position is that we consider that Mr. Ouattara, who had no right to run for the third term, is not a president because he has completed his 2 terms, and running for the third term is illegal and unconstitutional. So from that standpoint, we consider that the opposition and the civil society of Cote d'Ivoire should come together and establish a transitional council. This is what Mr. Bidye has declared. Now, we are in a situation where the government says that it is a conspiracy and they are arresting the people. But as I said before, from where I am now, I cannot tell you whether it is true or not, but I will check it.
Jean-Yves Tchéide is vice president for finance of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo's party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abidjan. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 3,200 Ivorians have fled post-election violence in their country to Liberia, Ghana, and Togo, and more reportedly are on their way. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Violent clashes erupted in Ivory Coast after Saturday's presidential elections, reportedly killing at least 12 people and injuring many more. That has prompted thousands of people to flee to neighboring countries. The UN Refugee Agency says most of the new arrivals are women and children from Ivory Coast West and Southwest regions. Among them, it says, are former Ivorian refugees who had recently returned to their home country. Now they have been forced to flee again. UNHCR spokesman Boris Cheshakov describes the situation as very worrying. He tells VOA expectations are high that more people will leave Ivory Coast based on the acceleration of new arrivals Monday.
In a 24-hour period, we registered 1,000 refugees coming into Liberia. That's for a total of 2,600. Some of those people having come into the country in the days preceding the election. So what we are doing is we're working closely with the government of Liberia, but also Ghana and Togo on contingency plans should the situation worsen and should more people start to come across the border.
President Alassane Ouattara won a hotly contested third term, receiving 94% of the vote, according to the Electoral Commission. The opposition disputes the victory, calling Ouattara's bid for a third term illegal. The president and his supporters argue a constitutional change in 2016 nullified the president's first term, allowing him to run again. Cheshakov says the election has triggered violence not seen in Ivory Coast since 2011, raising fears the current situation could spark another conflict.
And we know that people are looking back to 2010-11, that period when there was violence, which at that time led to 3,000 dead, more than 300,000 refugees fleeing in the region, and around 1 million displaced.
The UNHCR is urging Ivorian political and opinion leaders to show restraint and to work together to calm the situation. It is calling on them to refrain from inciting violence and resorting to hate speech and to resolve disputes peacefully and through dialogue. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Burkina Faso is holding elections on November 22nd, but more than 400,000 people displaced by armed conflict are unable to vote. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
Fighting between Burkina Faso's military and Islamist militants has displaced more than 1 million people, half of them this year alone. Ouagadougou's Pazani suburb hosts nearly 3,000 displaced, including Fatimata Ouedraogo, who lives in a tiny house hastily built from cinder blocks with her five children. They fled to Ougadji village last year after armed men killed six of their neighbours. She says they used to farm in the village and sell the produce at the local market. But they had to leave, says Ouedraogo, because of the terrorists who came and killed people. Over 400,000 displaced people like Ouedraogo weren't able to vote in Burkina Faso's November 22nd elections as they lost identification papers or weren't offered registration. The government says it was not possible to register voters in areas of the country overrun by armed groups. At the Independent Electoral Commission, workers are busy preparing millions of ballots for the election. Commission spokesman Yakuba Ouedraogo says people in unsafe areas can travel to register elsewhere and still vote. He says they don't know why some people did not come to register. Is it because they don't have documents, asked Ouedraogo. We don't know, he responds, adding that he insists they will receive any Burkinabe that has all the required documents for registration. Political analysts say Burkina Faso authorities are balancing the security challenge with the need for democratic elections, but also taking a risk. Judd Devermont is the Africa Programme Director at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C.
The inability of many Burkina Bay to vote in this election is a considerable challenge. Of course, if 5 out of the 13 regions are unable to vote, it will leave a cloud of illegitimacy around whoever is elected.
Troops from West Africa, France, and the US have struggled since 2013 to fight a growing terrorist insurgency in the Sahel region, with attacks nearly doubling every year. The US State Department and rights groups have accused Burkina Faso's security forces of abuses and killing of civilians, fueling terrorist recruitment. At her tiny house, Fatoumata Ouédraogo says if she could vote, she would vote for change. I would vote for the party able to ensure we can go back to our home village, she says, and have access to water, food and security. Meanwhile, unable to farm, Ouédraogo ekes out a living collecting sand to sell to builders. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, November 4th. Uganda's opposition candidates registered for next year's presidential election on Tuesday with heavy security and the brief detention of musician-turned-politician Bobi Wine. Wine was taken into custody just minutes after he registered to challenge President Yoweri Museveni, who has been in power for 34 years. Halima Athumani reports from Kampala.
Excitement, cheers, and a heavy security presence marked the day for politician Robert Kyagulanyi, better known by his stage name Bobi Wine. Wine got into his car Tuesday morning, headed for the National Electoral Commission in Kampala. Authorities gave him a specific route to take and a convoy of 5 police trucks, 4 police motorcycles, 2 military trucks, and 1 police Subaru made sure he didn't stray. Along the route, crowds gathered by sides of the road cheering him on. At one point, when the crowds grew big, police threw a tear gas can inside the car he shared with his wife. Breathing heavily, Wine spoke to VOA at a stopover.
Well, we are soldiering on. We're trying to get to the nomination center, but every now and then the police stops us.
Wine arrived at the nomination center a little after 11 a.m. After he was officially nominated to run in the presidential election, Electoral Commission Chairman Simon Viabakama asked Wine to refrain from waving to his supporters through his car roof.
Processions along public roads are prohibited. Secondly, as an aspirant, we expect you to take personal responsibility towards your supporters as well as yourself by discouraging them from gathering in large numbers.
In his nomination speech, Wine took a swipe at President Yoweri Museveni, saying it's time to stop lamenting and act against what he called injustices, impunity and oppression in the country.
Mr. Museveni, since you have failed to control your greed and lust for power, our generation is determined to save you from yourself and stop your 35-year-old dictatorship. In this election, I am representing the weak. I am representing the poor. I am representing the downtrodden. I am representing those that have been excluded from a system which works only for a few.
On his way back, Wine was removed from his car and driven in a police van to an unknown destination until later when he was taken home. More tear gas was shot to disperse the crowds. Wine was not the only one who faced the wrath of security agents on this day. Forum for Democratic Change presidential candidate Patrick Oboy Amuriat was picked up from the party offices with no shoes and taken to the nomination center. Oboy says walking barefoot was not his choice, but shows the kind of dictatorship the opposition is up against.
Today I came to this nomination a prisoner while trying to access my office to get vital documents. I was kidnapped by the security forces, forced into a salon vehicle, brutalized.
As the nominations close, 8 challengers have registered to compete against President Museveni in the February presidential election. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Malawi announced on Tuesday that it will establish an embassy in Jerusalem. The announcement was made during a visit to Israel by Malawi Foreign Minister Eisenhower Mkapa. Sean Campodeni is Director of Communications for Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera.
It came about because our newly elected president, Lazarus Chakwera, went to parliament for the first time in early September and delivered his State of the Nation address. And in the portion of the speech where he was outlining his foreign policy agenda, he announced his intention to establish full diplomatic relations with certain strategic partners. And one of them that he mentioned was Israel.
Prior to this development, Sean, how would you describe Malawi-Israeli relations?
Well, Malawi has had diplomatic relations with Israel since Malawi's independence in 1964. It might be instructive for you to know that Malawi was supportive of Israel back in the Six-Day War that took place shortly after Malawi's independence. And it was a very unpopular decision at the time. But the founding president of the Malawi nation, the late Hastings Kamuzu Banda, was a great friend of Israel.
As you know, President Chakwera will soon assume the chairmanship of SADC. Did he consult with the region before this development?
As you know, matters of geopolitics and bilateral relations are things that are influenced by multilateral agreements that are established at various international blocs, including the Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, as well as the African Union. And so there are always discussions and consultations taking place at various levels, including those ones. However, President Chakwera has made it clear that Malawi will always pursue diplomatic relations on the basis of what is in the best interest of Malawi and where there are voices of dissent and difference. He also welcomes that debate because he believes that it would not be a democratic world if we all ascribed to one point of view on any particular issue, including what kind of relationship to have with a nation like Israel. At the same time, he has also made it clear that he's very supportive of the agenda for the two-state solution between Israel and Palestine. And Malawi has had very warm and cordial relations with various nations in the Arab world. And President Chakwera continues to advocate for the same in the interest of peace in the region.
So, Sean, how soon before Malawi opens an embassy in Jerusalem?
Well, the Minister of Foreign Affairs from Malawi is in Israel presently, and he's holding talks with his counterpart there. And they are working on a timeline to the establishment of not only an embassy in Israel for Malawi, but also on a timeline for the establishment of a representation for Israel here in the Malawian capital, Lilongwe.
Sean Kapodeni is Director of Communications for Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera. You're speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. Hundreds of Malawian women marched on Tuesday to protest the rising incidents of sexual abuse of women and girls. The protesters, led by the Association of Media Women in Malawi, aimed to push authorities for tougher punishment against perpetrators. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The Association of Women in Media is worried with the increasing cases of rape.
Clad in purple and white t-shirts, the female journalists carried placards calling for stringent measures against sexual offenders, with some calling for castration. Edith Kambalam is the chairperson of the Association of Media Women in Malawi, which led the protest in Blantyre.
As journalists, we're saying we have been reporting on issues of rape and defilement for a long, long time, but we're seeing little impact on the ground. We acknowledge the efforts that the police are putting in place, the courts, and we also know that there are laws in place. But we believe that if these issues are continuing, then they probably are not stringent enough.
Some recent cases have brought attention to the ongoing problem of rape and sexual abuse in Malawi. Last week, police arrested a 38-year-old man in the southern district of Chikwawa after allegedly raped an 11-year-old girl, then dumped her along the side of the road. Police in Blantyre recently arrested a senior employee at the Medical Aid Society of Malawi for raping his sister's daughter, just 14 years old. Peter Galaya, deputy spokesperson for the Malawi Police Service, told VOA the trend is rising.
For example, in terms of defilement cases, in 2018, the Malawi Police Service recorded a total of 1,539 cases. In 2019, we recorded a total of 1,766 cases, whereas this year in 2020, between January and September, we have recorded a total of 1,501 cases, meaning that by the time we hit December, these cases will have gone beyond 1,766 cases we recorded in 2019.
The protesters attributed the rise to lenient penalties, which currently allow rapists a maximum jail sentence of 2 years. Kampala Mayor says this is not enough.
So what we are asking, in a nutshell, is for the policymakers, the Minister of Gender in particular, because it's mandated to protect women and girls in this country, to put in place more stringent measures to facilitate the some legal review to say that those that are proven to have defiled or raped anyone should get life imprisonment.
Humphrey Mvula, a social commentator and a panelist on the TV show Hot Current, says these punishments are a little too harsh. He says what Malawi needs is better sex education in schools.
Sex education needs to start from lower classes going up, because, look, there are also areas where you find that some of our girls, unfortunately, may find themselves in situations where possibly they're not properly protected. Possibly you want to join a beer party, and then you have individuals who still look at women as objects.
Meanwhile, Minister of Gender Patricia Galiati says women who choose to press charges of rape or abuse will be provided with a lawyer for free by her ministry. She says the government and various donors are paying for the lawyers. She adds that the government is drafting a bill that could include the maximum jail term for convicted rapists to life imprisonment. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Zimbabwe authorities have rearrested journalist Hopewell Chigono for contempt of court. He was first arrested in July this year for writing on social media in support of an anti-government protest about corruption. After more than a month in jail, Chigono was granted a bail with the condition that he stops posting on Twitter. Zimbabwe political analyst Rejoice Mgwenya says Chigono apparently opened a new Twitter account, a violation of his bail conditions.
Well, it's pretty sad, really, James, because, when somebody has been released on bail and apparently first arrest was not necessary. But when somebody has been released and the government, the state, says no proof of conviction, it is important that it maintains the consistency in rule of law and not just arrest, journalists, because this is a multi-party democracy, it's a constitutional democracy. And journalists are meant to be free to say things they want to say. So it's really sad. It's another sad chapter, really, in the history of authoritarianism in Zimbabwe.
We followed this story of Chigono's first arrest before he was released. And I think the condition was that to stay away from social media. So what do you make of this? If this is true now, that he reestablished another social media account or Twitter.
Look, I mean, journalists survive on transmitting news, and the social media is one of the most effective ways of communicating in the modern day era. It's really unfortunate that the court can just give a very blanket prohibition. But of course, I mean, Hopewell, as a seasoned journalist himself, should also know that when you are dealing with an authoritarian regime, they will take each and every opportunity to incarcerate you. So by going back again onto Twitter, I think also that was an act of exuberance. Not that there's anything wrong, but, it's also important not to play in the arena of ZANU-PF intimidatory tactics. But it's very correct that they claim, they allege that he has violated his bail conditions by going back to Twitter.
Rejoice Mgwenya is a Zimbabwe political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. And that's it for this Wednesday, September 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.